on 1116 SEN. Welcome to the Coach's Box. For the all-new Nissan NP300 Navara. Here now. Test drive at your Nissan dealer today. And Odyssey Financial. Achieve the future you deserve.
After an exhausting week, it's time to talk and then play footy. Could the Tigers cause a huge upset over the Hawks and get back in the top four conversation? The man who almost engineered a victory over the all-conquering Hawks will join us shortly.
The final margin is 138 points. A smashing, a belting, a shellacking, whatever word you want to use, Hawthorn dominant over the Blues.
Fremantle on a rare trip to the MCG are going to salute. And the Dockers, top of the table. And the Richmond players, the fans, they share the pain.
Of course, we'll give our views on where the Adam Good story goes from here, but we'll also debate the week's other issues, including last weekend's free kick explosion, ask if Mick will coach again, should the Lions get a priority pick, and has Roosie got the D's on the right track or not?
Somewhere between the message that we gave the umpires on Tuesday and Thursday, and even over the last couple of weeks, to what happened on the weekend, there's been some sort of miscommunication.
It's a big step for Adelaide, and it'd be a massive step for me, but I wouldn't totally dismiss not talking to them, put it that way.
This can't keep going on, because you're not going to sell seats. I would rather die of a guillotine than a thousand cuts.
If they contest it, ASADA advises the AFL, who then organises a tribunal hearing or some sort.
One draft pick's fantastic, two is even better, isn't it? So that's something for the, I guess, the lawmakers to decide whether we deserve one or not.
I'm not sure that Brisbane's situation would be worse than Melbourne's over the last 5, 6, 7 years.
Just to have all that bad energy targeted towards me and disappointing. I'm coming towards the end of my career, and if I leave the game this year and, you know, that's the aftermath of what's happened at the end of my career, I'd be really disappointed with that.
Our special guest in the coach's box, Magpie coach Nathan Buckley. After 5 losses in a row, we'll discuss the short and long-term challenges.
We've played some good footy, but we just ultimately haven't got over the line. You know, the next 6 weeks for us is where our season is at. So, you know, we lower our eyes and focus on Melbourne on Saturday and an opportunity for us to get back to playing 4 quarters of our best footy.
6:03. Welcome, everyone, to the Coach's Box for the all-new Nissan NP300 Navara here now. Test drive at your Nissan dealer today. And Odyssey Financial, achieve the future you deserve. As I look around the SEN Commentary Box star-studded panel, I'll just lower my eyes and see Dermot Brereton here on a Friday night. Welcome, Derm.
Good evening, Anthony. How are you?
You sound like Alfred Hitchcock or something there. Good evening.
No, you're just staring at me as you say good evening. So I'm thinking, what have you got in store here?
Well, you've had a big week, but any chance?
No, I haven't really.
Any chance the Tigers tonight?
Yeah, if you run out in the ground against the opposition, you're a chance. The laws of probability will say Hawthorn have the lion's share of that chance, though. Playing all right, not anywhere near the absolute top. Their usage of the ball in their side of the game is very, very good. I still reckon they've got a rise left in them for competitive football.
Cameron Mooney, have you got a view on the Tigers tonight?
Yeah, well, like I was saying a little bit to you a bit earlier, I think they're playing pretty good footy. And I think they, as I said, there's a difference between what happened last week, whether they won or they lost. They lost the game last week. Fremantle didn't win it. They lost it. They blew a massive chance. So they should go in with some confidence. I just think Hawthorn are on another planet right now.
Rowan Connolly's with us from The Age, as he always is, on a Friday night. Welcome to you. Rowan, we walked away, I think, from round one or two when they thrashed Geelong, and a whole lot of people said they won't lose a game all year. They then lost 4. Are we almost back to that point now?
Just about. I wasn't one of those people, but I reckon they're playing just as well now as they did in that opening game. I mean, and where I think Richmond might struggle tonight is just to match them for firepower, particularly with Griffiths out. I think Richmond have been terrific defensively, but even in their winning form before last week, you know, they haven't been conjuring many goals. I think they've kicked 10 goal tallies about 3 times in the last 4 or 5 games. So you need more than that against Hawthorn. It's one thing to be stern defensively, but you've got to be able to hit back with something at the other end, and I'm not sure they've got enough of it.
The man who, as I said in the intro, probably only a month ago, almost engineered a victory over them, Nathan Buckley, is our special guest in the coach's box tonight. Coach of the Pies, welcome, Bucks.
Yeah, hello. Can I just paint a picture for the listeners? I've come in
Imagine you're in an aircraft. I'm not in the window. I'm not in the aisle. I'm right in the gut, so you don't have as much leg room. My cans have more sticky tape on it than I reckon I've ever seen. So I've got the worst set of cans. So thanks for making me welcome.
And jeez, you must have a good set of cans.
Do you want the red carpet?
Well, I couldn't find that either.
What'd you say, Dan?
No, let's not back over it, Anthony.
Bucks, just on the on that game a month ago, I mean, you really, if you'd kicked straight, would have beaten Hawthorn, and yet we all know what's happened. You haven't been able to put the victories together. So does that show their form since then? I mean, have they stepped up over that last 3 weeks to a level that surprised you, or did you do things that those other three teams weren't able to do, do you think?
Roughhead wasn't playing on the night. We played probably our best game of footy for the year that particular evening and didn't get the points, which is why judging on win-loss can be a little bit difficult at times, especially for sides that are developing. We're not happy with losing five games in a row, but we have played some good footy, but we've probably lowered our standard in the last, I'd say, last six quarters. Last half against West Coast and the game against Bulldogs wasn't exactly the way we wanted to play. But when you go to Hawthorn, I mean, I think they've upped their level from there, and there's no doubt that their best is clearly the best in the comp still. And they've gapped the rest of the competition in that time. And
how have they done that to your eye? Or what are they doing that is...
Well, they've got great belief in the way they play. I think the way that they flick players from position to position makes them really hard to counter from a run-with perspective. And if you do try to do that, they've got too many players that can hurt you at different times. So, I mean, they're a team in a true sense.
Yeah. Explain that further from a coach's point of view.
Well, Sam Mitchell can play half-back or he can play in the middle. Sam Mitchell isn't getting sat on as much now as he was 2 years ago because the way Clarkson and the Hawks have set it up, it's a lot harder to follow him around. Like, he could be at the back of a stoppage, he could be in a stoppage, he could be forward of a stoppage, and then he could be totally not in a stoppage at all and in the back six within 10 minutes of football. So if you're going to follow him, that leaves holes. And if the Hawthorn boys are prepared for, right, if a bloke gets tagged, we'll move him here, here, here and here, they have the experience and the maturity to be able to handle that a lot better than most teams in the competition.
Do you reckon, Bucks, they've added something to their armoury every year since 2012? 2013, it was about getting a better spread of goal kickers, when Buddy was still there. 2014, it became about depth because they had a whole heap of injuries and had to find players to cover that. And this year, as you said, it's become more about positional flexibility.
I think the thing that you didn't mention then that they've really added is speed on the outside. Now, Bradley Hill's been a project on its way over the last 2 or 3 years. Yeah. Isaac Smith was recruited as a mature age recruit. Speed, outside speed and tremendous endurance capabilities. Billy Hartung adds to that. So they've got three or four guys that can get outside with speed. So that breaks up. I think the Hawks are in an enormous sweet spot and have been for a number of years, and that's why they've been the premiership team.
Can I just ask you one quickly about specifically playing them? Because Wayne Carey wrote in the Age today about this is how you beat Hawthorn. Other people have mentioned it. One thing that keeps coming up is sides try to outnumber them at the stoppages, and that creates a catch-22 because they might win the ball at the stoppages, but the ball inevitably ends up being kicked to Birchall, Gibson, etc., who are loose in defence. So when you played them, and you've come as close as anyone recently, what did you do in terms of the midfield matchups?
Well, we wanted to play our brand as well as we possibly could. I think what you find when you play against a Hawthorn side that's up and running, you find out a lot about the weaknesses in your game plan because that's generally what gets pushed. Is the underbelly of your plan. And we, as I said, we played pretty well that night. We were, we were 10 points up, 10 minutes into the last quarter. Hot handball from Clokey to Jordan to go. He was running into an open goal. So, I mean, I could give you the rest blow by blow if you like. But,
thanks, Jordan.
But in the end, no, it's actually Clokey's hard hands. But in the end, we weren't able to get the job done. I think that the thing that's underrated with Hawthorn is their capacity to put the right bodies in the right places defensively to slow their opposition down and their legitimate hardness inside. Now, I don't think they were anywhere near it in the first half of the year. And like any team, when you go 50-50 in contest or your defence isn't quite sharp enough, then you'll go 50-50 in win-loss. And that's exactly what happened. So Hawthorn just do the basic elements of the game better than most. and they're more experienced to be able to ride the momentum shifts of a game. And really, they're the standard bearer for modern football. And every side is not just trying to get to them, you're trying to go past them. We can't just try to get to Hawthorn. We're trying to go past them. But it's a tough ask because they're still playing quality footy.
Speaking of the other sides then, Bucks, you came up against West Coast a couple of weeks ago, and we're all looking at, from a football public point of view, we're all looking for the team that can match them, go past them, beat them. Are they a team that you think, that you saw them firsthand a couple of weeks ago, that can go there?
Yeah, well, their development and maturity over the last 12 months has been exceptional. I think Etihad really suits them. They close the space down. The way that they're zoning press through the middle of the field and behind the ball is working really well for them. There's an argument to say they're better without their tall defenders, because their ability to springboard off the back is exceptional. They any blue we made with the ball going forward was
turnover
just,
bang.
Yeah, just killed with turnover and their. And when we talk about outside speed and run, Maston and Gaff on those wings are really hurting people. Cripps is getting up and back, and they've got a mix that's going to work really well for them on big ground. So they'll be preparing for the MCG, but I think it really suited them on Etihad as well. Good side, really really rate them.
If I had the liberty to offer you enough money to say, all right, I'm going to put you on a consultancy role for the Fremantle Dockers, what advice would you give them first up at this stage of the year with their list?
I can tell you whatever you want to know about the strengths of opposition sides. I don't reckon I'll be making any comment about other opposition sides, mate, because this is actually going to air.
It was a very clever way of framing it. But you're
okay,
not,
well,
you're
we,
not
need, we know the obvious shortcomings. No, we know the obvious shortcomings they have.
Yeah.
Take three.
Okay. What can they do?
Well, I mean, their Fremantle's onewood is their ability to defend, and they've done that better than any side in the competition over the last 3 or 4 years. They have a mature and experienced list who are able to play exceptional football when they're up and about. So they require all of their senior players to be top of ground and feeling good about their body to be able to play good footy. Now that's not a guarantee. That's not so much a tactic as it is a personnel issue that they need to ensure when they get to the end of the season. They need Walters and Ballantyne to be playing exceptional football and clearly with Ballantyne out potentially for the rest of the year. Crozier is going to be a big one for them. But I think Crozier, you're talking about a 20 game player who's been around for 2 or 3 years but has limited opportunity. So you're asking him to come in and maybe he does step up. And what you do find with young blokes is when you give them the opportunity, they're going to give you something a little bit different to what you've had. But they just need to get the best out of their best players, Freo. And, Fife and Mundy and Neil, Stephen Hill are up and about and have good ones. They can beat any team on their day if they're winning contested ball because their defensive actions are generally pretty good.
Because we've spoken about Hawthorn, we've spoken about Richmond, we've spoken about several teams, and we were saying Hawthorn, okay, they might get rolled or not, who knows, but
Richmond have got a pretty good record on them too.
Yeah, they do. If they all play their best football, who is the that is their best football, besides your own good Magpies, who is the logical challenger in your mind to them?
After we played West Coast, we asked the boys, I said, where do West Coast rank against the sides we've played? Now, the only side we haven't played yet this year is Sydney, and we play them up at the SCG in 3 weeks. But a few of the boys put their hand up and said, we think West Coast is the best side we've played this year.
Because they're forward half prowess. I mean, there's a lot of elements to it, but that is a big...
Just all we're talking about is when you're talking to the players, I wasn't asking for blow-by-blow. I just said, in the general flow of play, in the feeling of how you felt out in the game, with what the opposition were throwing at you, with how we were going, how much did they allow you to do what we wanted to do, how much were we able to take away their strengths, where do we sit? And, quite a few boys said, we thought they were right up there, probably the best we've played. And then we had a few of the old heads just come back and go, Hawthorn are clearly the best we've played, but West Coast are right up there. So I'd have to say West Coast. And I agree with that because their consolidated balance of defence, and they're very efficient in defence. They're only allowing 42 inside 50s against on average, so their defence is stacking up. Nat Nui in the middle is a gun that not many sides have, and ruckman we know in finals are going to be a big issue. They've got a great midfield that are starting to do a lot of damage, and they've got a really damaging forward line, and their ball use at the moment is pretty hard to stop. Yeah. So they've got a lot going for them right now, but you don't hand out any trophies at round 18.
No, you don't. It's great to talk footy. It's 16 past six. We will return to talking pure footy issues very shortly, but we must address the massive story that has been of the week of Adam Goodes. You spoke passionately about it on Monday night, and I thought, you know, magnificently. What's our best hope from here, where this story is going to go, do you think?
You see, it's the vehicle of this story is Adam Goodes and racism, but I think the real story is general and genuine respect for each other, regardless of whether you're a minority or a majority, whether you're the colour of your skin. When we put so many people in an arena like the MCG, we rely on common decency to be able to exist in a society together. So I think this highlights that to me. And the fact that we've had people that have taken an opportunity, and I don't know whether, you know, if one person starts booing and then you get a peanut next to him and he starts booing, and then there's strength in numbers, and that's what's happened. That's how this has got to where it's got to. And I think it's disappointing that it's a poor reflection on us and our genuine lack of empathy for others that it's got to this point. And I think it's great that we can highlight it and discuss it.
Does it? I think it is too. But I mean, do you think... I've been quite depressed by it, to be perfectly honest, because, you know, I read some of the sort of trolling going on in major media organisations and people so at odds with what is clearly the view of the football world and the football community. And I think a section of the football public is at odds with them too. I've been getting trolled on social media all week because I've been very, you know, I think this is a political issue, and I think it's the Goodes thing is almost a genesis for putting Indigenous rights and welfare back on the table as a discussion point. And people say, well, we need to have a discussion. But I think when the discussion is actually raised via something like the Goodes incident, people then go in 10 seconds, oh, enough, we're sick of it. And, you know, I think if we're actually to achieve any sort of reconciliation in this country, we have to make ourselves, we have to confront our inherent prejudices, and we have to look at ourselves and sometimes feel a bit uncomfortable about what we see. And I think that some people have a fundamental aversion to doing that because they don't like the picture it paints of themselves and their country.
No, and no one likes to be told what to think or who they are. I mean, and that's happening on both sides. So Adam Goodes doesn't want to be segregated or marginalised because of his heritage and because of who he is as an Indigenous man, and he speaks so proudly about it.
Isn't that
people in the crowd
issue, though,
don't want to be people in the crowd don't want to be told, hey, you can't think or feel this. And so that's where people on both sides are, and there are sides, which is so disappointing because we're all the same. We're all flesh and blood.
Just quickly, Doom, I know you want to have a point. One of the things that's really, really annoyed me with this, now, people who know me know that my politics are left of centre, but I really resent people saying to me, oh, you lefty, or it's a leftist issue. How is it a left versus right argument, this? I thought it was just about sort of common decency.
We'll agree on that.
I've been in heated agreement with you. Getting that thrown at me all week. There are aspects of this whole scenario.
Nathan, you said castigated because of his race. The feedback I get is people don't believe it's because it's of his race that they boo him.
So you don't think that there's any part of what it got to that was about his race?
Any part?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
Really?
None.
Zero.
No, sorry. No, I agree with you. Yeah, you said any part. No.
Yeah. So even if there is 1% in it, I think it's worth addressing that part of the issue.
You cannot tell all of Australians, you cannot tell 5, 10, however many thousand it is a weekend, you're racist because you boo. And if somebody has a contrary argument, you can't call them racist.
No, I think you're ignorant if you boo. I don't think you're racist if you boo, because I don't think there's any benefit in booing at all. Now, I understand this is a cathartic arena. You come here to purge yourself of Instead, short of kicking the dog, this is the best way to getting rid of your anger and your frustrations, and this isn't working at home and that's not working at home and no one will listen to me. So we come here and we voice it. And if we didn't have this, you know, the Roman Colosseums, this is what it is to get all that anger so we don't have ring crime in the streets or whatever you want to look
that's
at.
That's what it was for you, man.
In round nine, 2013, when Adam was in that pocket and he was disparaged and he pointed the person out, I mean, he's turned around and said, I was shocked that I when I worked out who it was, that I was actually pointing at a 13-year-old girl. Mm. Now, the way that was reported beyond that, was it not the next day that said the face of racism on the front of the paper? Now, that's not Adam Goodge's fault, how it was reported.
But what about
he didn't call it the face of racism. The media called it the face of racism. And I reckon if I'm a fair-minded person and I look that up, I go, well, that isn't the face of racism. That is the face of a system that needs to educate a little bit better.
Rowan, can you educate me? Because I am led to believe from other media outlets that the next day Adam did say, this is what I'm led to believe, so you might be able to educate me and steer me absolutely in the right direction here, that Adam did say racism has a face. And it's a 13-year-old girl.
He did say that. But
he also said in the next breath,
in the context,
I plead with people to be, you know, show this girl some compassion. She, you know, we need to educate.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what he was saying.
That's what I'm asking.
That's what he was saying. It was a shame that was the face of racism.
Take race out of it. I'm sure that if you sat Adam down. And spoke about his actions and behaviour at different times, that he might think that, hey, I could go about what I'm doing a little bit differently. But at the same time, he might actually say that I'm deliberately shocking and I'm deliberately challenging because there's not enough movement towards the genuine respect for my culture.
I don't people believe that he is genuinely attempting to alienate...
Well, without evidence, that opinion has no weight.
No, I'm saying I reckon people do believe that opinion. I don't think they're going around saying he's deliberately attempting to do this. Mm. I think it has happened. They believe it has happened.
His Australia Day speech was widely misquoted and
absolutely
has been all week.
Absolutely. So
I think I didn't know about it. I read that a couple of days ago and I thought, well... And I was actually explaining this to my 8-year-old son yesterday because watching 360, sitting there, and he goes, why isn't Adam Goodge playing? So I pause. 30 minutes later, got to the point I said, and he was Australian of the Year. And in his speech, he spoke about the fact that we came over, you know, the European people came over at a certain time and that was how we celebrate Australia Day. But the Indigenous cultures were here before. And for them, can you imagine them on the land? This is our land. We're hunting, we're gathering, we're sleeping, we're living. This is all we know. And we're invaded. So that makes common sense.
So it makes absolute sense. Doesn't this story give you a good idea of the power of media to rewrite history? Now, when the incident with the girl happened, my memory is that, you know, you would have thought 90% of the media sentiment was very much with Adam Goodge. You know, no one had an issue. And then subsequent to that, I think Miranda Devine was the first person to sort of go the other way, but it was all about bullying a 13-year-old girl. Now, that seems to have become the popular view. Mm. The other thing that these sort of commentators...
Popular view is whatever is allowed to hit
populist
mainstream.
View.
Yeah, but see, that's the issue. That media has a lot... You were talking about... I hate politics. I really do, because I think a lot of it is just about gaining favour from the masses. Now, but in the end, I think the media drive a lot of the opinions of the masses, whether it's footy, whether it's politics, you know, anything.
Well, you know
we'll
what I'd
tell
say?
You what to think.
I'd say that the opinions in this case by the football media have been the more reasoned and rational opinions, and some of the screaming banshees at the front end of the paper have been absolutely revolting on this.
Rowan, we're going to just pause it there because these issues have gone around and around all week and we need to take a break.
That's a tough thing because it's pretty hard to find a solution to it, Hutto, other than coming back. Take race out of it, take everything out of it. Treat people with respect and treat them the way that you'd expect yourself to be treated. And if we go back to that, we'll see things a whole lot differently.
Couldn't agree more. You're not saying, though, that we shouldn't boo at the footy at all, are you?
Well, my kids at VFL started booing the side that were playing against Collingwood. I gave a clip them over the ear. I said, you can cheer as loud as you like about your team, but why would you jeer someone else when without that team we wouldn't have a competition?
But if someone whacks someone tonight, you don't have an issue with the opposition team having booing that player for the rest of the night, do you? Or do you think you should...
Mate, I got booed. And Dermy, look at this bloke here, he got booed flat out. Actually, you wanted to get booed. Yeah.
That's fair enough, too.
But some people handle that worse than others. Yeah. Some people...
Once it becomes over a long...
Yeah, it depends what the issues are.
Once it becomes over a long period of time.
Depends what the issues are.
It's when, for when, different
when
reasons.
When I got caught here with Lingy and he cut me and I put some blood on his jumper and he had to come off.
Disgrace.
I got booed. I got booed roundly and I knew exactly what it was for.
But people shouldn't equate that with this booing, should they? They're entirely different reasons.
It is part of the theatre.
26 past six, we'll take a break. Before we do, we'll just quickly check in with Ben Dixon at Crown Bet. Evening, Dicko.
G'day, Hutto, and pretty one-sided betting affair in the head-to-head. Hawks, $1.15. Richmond, the 5.75. Lions, 35.5. That's been the most popular thinking. Hawthorn will cover that pretty convincingly. And I'll just remind you, mate, it's red round, so we've got a little bit of a special going. Nick Boston tonight, plus 12 possessions on BJ, who's that scratch? Brendan Goddard. So if you think Boston can get 20 possessions, that'll jack him up to 32. He's $7, something of a bit of interest to entertain your Friday night.
Thank you, Dicko. Ben Dixon from Crown Bet. Download the app today. Gamble responsibly. If you're going to have a wager, make sure you do it within your means. It's 26 past six. Back after the break, more on the Coach's Box with Nathan Buckley. We turn our attention to other footy issues for the all-new Nissan NP300 Navara and Odyssey Financial. Achieve the future you deserve. 29-7 at the MCG ahead of the big game between Hawthorn and Richmond. It is the Coach's Box for Odyssey Financial. Achieve the future you deserve. And the all-new Nissan NP300 Navara here now. Test drive at your Nissan dealer today. Rowan Connolly, Cameron Mooney, Dermot Brereton, Anthony Hudson, and our special guest in the Coach's Box, Nathan Buckley. Let's fire through some of the other issues. Rules of the game and discussion around the rules, potential changes. Now, Bucks, you have been... Well, you were on the rules committee, weren't you, for a brief period, but then stormed off because they kept changing the rules?
Yeah, I was just filling a seat at the time.
You cracked up with KB, didn't you?
You brought the vest in, didn't
no,
you?
No, well, I don't you? Agree with KB. I agree with KB very rarely, but
did he
no,
get
I,
a
didn't,
say?
I didn't crack it with him.
Did Kevin actually get a say or get rolled on everything and just have to be the mouthpiece thereafter?
There were... KB was better as a mouthpiece, but in the end, that's all part of it. I mean, we can't ignore the fact that the AFL has a PR arm that starts things in motion and smooths and tests the waters, and that's all part of it. And especially where Gil's coming from a platform of for the fans, so I think most of the things that'll change will there'll be some form of referendum to test whether it's going to affect the gate or affect in a positive or negative sense. There's no doubt about that.
So can you articulate your view in a nutshell about where the game stands and do we need change? Now, most coaches are sort of evolutionists, but I'm detecting more and more. We've had Alan Richardson's one, Rodney Eade's certainly one, who believe that we do need some form of legislation to try and make the game more attractive. So where do you stand on that, and has your view changed at all?
No, well, I've always been keen, because I think as soon as we start talking about laws, well, then we'll talk more about laws, and then we'll talk more about laws, and then we'll look for what's wrong with the game. And as soon as we start looking about what's wrong with something, then it needs to be changed. Clearly, it needs to be changed. We ignore the good things. We ignore the great games. We ignore the things that we like about it, and we keep looking at looking for the things we don't like. I'm really concerned about legislating or changing laws that are going to force numbers into a certain part of the ground when I think that I would like to see, if any laws are changed or shifted, I'd like to see it be a base level, a fundamental part of it that needs to shift that will free everything else up.
So
you need a little bit more deeper thinking to get to that.
Are you talking about changes of umpiring interpretation then rather than actual laws?
Well, the thing, congestion can only happen when the ball slows.
Yeah.
And that's when you get, you know, at the pointy ends, clearly, when you get to the pointy ends, the ground narrows. It's easier to defend a narrow part of the oval. So if you want to press up, that's why the press was basically that came into vogue, because it's easier to defend that part of the ground because the opposition don't have as much width.
Mm.
So if you keep your layers in from a length sense, in a depth sense, and you really press up and take the width away, it's pretty hard to move the ball. So we're seeing congestion. That's why you see a mass of players up either end. And that's evolved. And in 2010, Collingwood were doing it heavily. Geelong started kicking long to a contest and keeping forwards forward of the ball. And that sort of shifted things and opened it up a little bit. But we're seeing more length and width in opposition offences than we've seen, than we saw 3 or 4 years ago. So we're seeing more space in certain situations. Where the space is being lost is when the ball stops moving. And the ball stops moving because we've changed the holding the ball interpretation. It's not even being adjudicated at the beginning of this year the way we were told it was going to be through pre-season.
Tackles
aren't being rewarded. And they were in the first 2 or 3 weeks, but it slowly went away.
They were talking about, just to interject there and give the listener a clear sight into that, they were talking about any half-second motion that was saying you were going to balk or hold on to and retain the ball was deemed as your prior opportunity. Yep. Any tackle applied thereafter would be holding the ball.
See, I don't think there should be any prior opportunity. And I think if you take away prior opportunity, then the ball carrier is forced to move it on with a little bit more intent, and there'll still be congestion because there'll still be people wanting to come in and tackle to be rewarded for this. All right, there's no prior, so we're going to go and lay that tackle.
Won't they give too much reward potentially to the tackler? Won't it mean people will sweat on players to pick the ball up?
Well, you'd think that. You might think that that's a natural reaction to it, and Moon's mentioned that off air. But in the end, the game of football is controlled by the person with the pill.
Isn't it?
How many tackles? When we have a good tackling game, we stick tackles at a rate of about 7 in 10. So there's still 3 in 10 that we're not the effective tackle. Now, effective tackle prevents an effective opposition disposal. So if you count ineffective opposition disposals, where there's still handballs but they don't go direct to a guy, it might be 1 in 2. So even now, when there's prior opportunity, we can only tackle at a rate of, you know, to prevent an effective disposal at 50%. So if you're saying, surely you're going to take that risk, well, I'll have the ball in my hand and I'll control the game for a period of time. And it's not 1v1. I've got teammates that I can use by handball or by foot. I can go short, I can go long. I've got my prior opportunity as a player is coming in to win the footy, that I know where my exits are, because that's how good boys, the players are at the moment. They know where their exits are before they pick up the ball, and they've got the opportunity to clear it.
So in practical terms, if you're talking about eliminating prior opportunity, take us through a typical example of where holding the ball would be paid where it isn't now.
Well, I would, the listeners at the moment, I would encourage you, when you watch the game of football tonight against Hawthorn Richmond, think no prior opportunity. Watch 5 minutes or 10 minutes and watch it and think, okay, if there was no prior opportunity, what circumstances would we be looking at? And I reckon you're looking at 3 or 4 or 5 circumstances over a 10-minute period, no more. It's not as if it's there all the time. And I reckon you'll find there'll be times when that ball would have needed to be used or disposed earlier because there's fierce pressure. Or you'll have the tackler rewarded, free kick, and then the game disperses again.
What about the situation where the... I don't disagree with you, but what about the situation where the ball carrier isn't even aware of the tackler's presence?
Well, I think that becomes the team aspect of footy. If I handball the ball to you and you're hot, and you get tackled...
It's your fault.
And that happens all the time.
It's a team's issue. Yeah. So are you going to discourage 2 or 3 little handballs in tight? Yeah, you might. What happens then? Well, you might encourage quick kicks. Or handballs out into space. Wouldn't that disperse?
Do you really think it would make that much difference, though?
Absolutely, because the congestion happens when there's a stoppage, tackle, can't clear it. Why isn't it getting cleared? Because teams are ready to try and handball through the pressure because they know they're not going to get pinged.
But a free kick is a stoppage in itself of sorts.
But you watch West Coast or Hawthorn. When Hawthorn get a free kick, you watch where the other 17 players go. To all ends, behind, in front, both wings, spread, so you create space. And that 6 or 7 seconds where you own the play and you own the footy and you can't be pressured, they're gold. Uncontested marks is one of the biggest indicators to efficient use because it's the only time in the field you can't actually be pressured.
If we cut rotation, say 60, what would that do in your view?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing.
It would satisfy
some commission members.
40, what would that do?
Rotations won't change the way the game's played.
So you actually think it'll have an adverse effect, don't you? That'll create more injury.
What you'll get, if you had less rotations, you'll probably get teams that sit behind the ball more and you'll get less scoring.
That's what all the coaches have said. Yeah. I haven't found a coach yet that hasn't...
So I was wrong. It won't do nothing. It'll
make the game worse.
Deteriorate. Mm.
Are you convinced of that, or is it worth a trial?
No, I've got my opinion.
just on the worth a trial thing, I think whatever we come up with, how are we going to trial this, whatever we change?
Well, I think it's going to have to... I've always, when I was on the laws of the game, I advocated unsuccessfully for a moratorium on rule change. Mm. Go 3 years without changing a rule so that there's not all this hysteria about changing rules, and then we might actually get a solid block of evidence to what rule needs to be changed because we've given it time to settle.
So hang on, a minute ago you said you wanted to change, take away prior opportunity. Well, are you saying we wait 3 years?
No, yeah, so this was 10 years ago. Okay. Because
so what, you've seen enough now?
Well, I think that if you're going to change one that's actually going to significantly impact the way the game is played in tight.
Yep.
And logically, we'll stop congestion. I mean, logically, yeah, we'll have the ball moving a little bit
some
more.
Some of them have been such minor changes, they're virtually more in effect changes of interpretation, aren't
but,
they?
But so if you change prior opportunity but then reduced interchange, you're going to get more fatigued players.
Yeah.
And you might actually find yourself in more congestion still.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
I still reckon if you keep rotations where they are or put them... Well, you can't actually fix it. If it's unlimited, I reckon it nearly capped out anyway.
See, there's an evolution, Nathan, and there is also the byproduct. I tend to think, yeah, the evolution is, yeah, coaches, if you start getting less at the stoppage, they're going to drop one extra behind the plate for the pressure kick forward. But then the byproduct of that will be someone will say, man him up.
Yeah.
And we go back to the way, perhaps we might even end up doing a double circle around and going back to the way football was intended, and that is a contest wherever the ball goes.
Yeah, and I think you're more like, even if that number isn't manned up, you'll get more transition play. And I reckon, as I said, I think the game's moved, the offensive aspects of the game in the last 3 years, really by Hawthorne's doing as much as anything and anyone's, and that's the coaching staff that have evolved it, their ability to spread, to use the ball by foot, to find space, to find time, to make it harder for the opposition to slow them down and to pressure them. I don't think we've had a team or a club that's been as offensively damaging as Hawthorn has in the last 3 or 4 years.
And yet scores across the board are lowest than they've been since 68.
But defences are better than they've ever been. Mm. And Hawthorn are cutting through, and they've, you know, that's what good teams do. And you know what bad teams do? They don't score because their offensive strategies or their personnel aren't good enough. They can't slow the opposition down. They can't defend. So let's not prioritise offence or defence. We want an even balance in both. And if we get an even balance in both, what it does is it actually highlights contest, because the contest should be where the game's won and lost.
Yep. Any last one on rules before we move on?
No, I just want to know, is that the only rule that you think needs to be looked at? Or is there other things that could help? Or is it just, if we get rid of this prior, we're going to get rid of congestion, we will see a more scoring game.
Well, everyone's got an opinion on... I think that because I'm trying to look at the game. I love the game. Then I look at the game and I think, well, how can we get what we want in regards to congestion, shifting the congestion, without changing the game too much? And that's where I'd settled on it. I'm not an advocate for massive rule change at all, mate. I think I love the game. I love watching the game. There are bad examples of it, and there are great ones, but I love the game.
Well, here's one for you. People always ask me, why do coaches then, they don't want congestion, why do they keep bringing your half forwards up? Opposition bring their half forwards up, they bring their wingers in. Why are we getting 30 people around the ball?
Well, I'll tell you why the half forwards come up. It's because the half backs are sitting 20 metres in front of them, and if there's a quick kick out of there, they take uncontested marks.
Because defence is now so big, isn't it?
Yeah, well...
They train for it so well.
I mean, coaches get such a bad name with apparently the tactics we bring in. We're just...
It's all your fault.
Just dragging this game through the mud.
Just before we get onto the... We need to break and come back and talk about the Pies. Just a couple of other quick issues from the week. Priority pick. Does anyone think Brisbane should get one?
Nope.
No. Get your culture
right. I've heard that, but until you actually go there and you meet people, we need Brisbane. And fair enough, I know there are Melbourne teams that have won one premiership in 50, 60 years or so. I know that, and I get that, and my sympathy for those supporters. As a national competition, we need a viable product coming out of Queensland.
We tried to help them, mate.
You tried to.
But they're not that bad.
they are not that bad. No, I mean,
they just got to get their culture club, right. They won't lose young players.
No, they need a couple of key players at either end of the ground to stand up, and they're still young.
But
if you compare them to some of the other sides that have been at the bottom of the ladder over the last 20 years,
I think it's more. It's a club issue of money as well. The crowds are weighed out. I just think there's actually too many teams in the competition. Talent's one thing.
So what do you want to do about that?
No, well, we just expanded the competition too quickly.
And that was wrong. We were talking about that on the way here.
It's not just a talent thing, though. It's in an 18-team competition, you are going to have...
diluted the competition with 90 players who wouldn't be on a list otherwise if we had 16 teams.
That's a huge issue. But it also means that there's going to be four or five teams down the bottom that are going to struggle, that their membership's going to be down, and some of those teams are going to be interstate.
And this is where the AFL has to be incredibly careful on all issues, and I mean all issues. The talent pool of 7 to 15, 16 year olds now, at best it might stay at the same number while our population grows, which means it's actually not getting better because we're having so many talented kids go off to other sports now because we need
like soccer.
Yeah, we need an attractive competition to make sure they come back.
It's more than about the spread of a talent pool too, Hutto. It's about creating a more tenuous football culture because the amount of relatively new clubs we now have in the competition and now a couple in traditionally hostile football areas coupled with some of the foundation clubs in the game, in the game's heartland, really struggling. You know, I think the competition is not as robust in terms of culture and following as it was 10 years ago.
We better break. That's probably a discussion which should take another hour, but we want to talk Collingwood with Nathan next. No change in either team tonight. Billy Hartung, fair dinkum. He is the Subway sub tonight.
Fair dinkum. He's run pretty hard lately.
Well, he's a pretty fair player.
Well, what do you want? Him or Luke Hodge?
Yeah, who else would you have?
Yeah,
who
are Sammy Mitchell?
Run through him.
Would he get a game in 17 other clubs, do you reckon?
So, Hutto, homework for Hutto during the break. Come up with who else should be sub and which teams you're going to get rid of out of the competition.
No, I didn't say there'd be any to get rid of. We have created this problem. There's no way out of it unless you're going to kick out some clubs.
Well, they tried to do that 20 years ago.
They did, and that didn't work, did it? All right, we'll take a break. This is the Coach's Box for the all-new Nissan NP300 Navara and Odyssey Finance. 10 to 7, this is the Coach's Box, as you heard, for Odyssey Financial and the all-new Nissan NP300 Navara. Test drive at your Nissan dealer today. Just repeating, no late changes for either team tonight. Hawthorn and Richmond, Hartung and Lloyd are the Subway subs. Nathan Buckley, I guess time to talk Collingwood. And, what do you think's been the main issue for you, Bucks? Or I guess if you rated your 5 weeks out of 10, where would it stand? Or is it too simple to group them as 5 weeks? Is it more an individual week by week?
It is. So I'm going to go for the whole year. The main issue for us is the growth in our young players and the growth in our leadership at the top. Pendlebury, Sidebottom, and Cloak in particular, the three of them have really stood up and been strong leaders. And they've helped the young blokes come along. So we've been able to bleed in some young players who have become, you know, significant impact, have had some significant impact for us really early in their careers, which is a positive sign for us going forward.
How difficult have the last 5 weeks been for you in that you've been, you know, right near the mark every time, and yet the bottom line is five straight losses? So, you know, you wouldn't have been ripping it through the players the first few weeks, but at what point do you start saying, geez, we've been close, and stop saying that and start saying the bottom line is we're not good enough against the best of opposition?
Yesterday, and we're just worried about playing against Melbourne, mate. So we.
Yesterday, what do you mean?
Yesterday, when we stopped talking about where we've been in the last five weeks. Yeah. Without being smart, I mean, I've been asked the question plenty. You know, two losses, three losses, four losses, five losses. Yeah, we want to win. Absolutely, we want to win. But we've lowered our colours in regards to our best football last week, I thought. I mean, the Bulldogs were pretty good, and Bevo said that he thought that's the best they'd move the ball for quite a while. That can only happen if you allow that to happen. So we've got a part to play in that. So we were disappointed with our performance last week, and we thought that we could have performed better against West Coast. Both of those games that Eddie had, we don't play there again. Next time we go there, we want to be a better defensive unit to be able to control the game better. But right now, you know, we come up against Melbourne tomorrow and we need to play our brand of footy. And, we get back in the MCG first time in 4 weeks. We like playing here, and we need to get our brand back up and going.
Bit of delicacy in this question, but looking forward, we've got 6 weeks to go. We look forward every year. We look forward to the immediate future, the medium and the long term. Now, as I say, there's delicacy in this, but there is talk from other teams that they want to have a look at Lachie O'Keefe and the other young lad who, unfortunately...
Josh O'Thomas.
Lachie O'Keefe, yeah, sorry.
You're thinking Johnny O'Keefe.
Well, yeah. What's your stance there?
Well, the fact of the matter is going to be that the boys have got to... First, they've got to get through the hearing with ASADA and work out how they're going to respond to their infraction notices. We'll sit down with both of the boys and talk about what they want to do with their football career. We're really keen for them to have the opportunity to continue their careers at Collingwood. But the reality of that is that it will probably result in us having to delist them and then re-rookie them. And that will probably be the end result, depending on those chats with those boys. We were just talking about the dilution of talent across the league because of the number of teams in there. There might be some teams that have a look and are prepared to have either one or both of those boys sit on the sidelines for 12 months and then take that risk.
So during the time of, if you were to release them from the primary list, and you were thinking about, if it all goes to plan, we can rookie them. And I'm no expert at this, so educate me. Is there an availability for other teams to step in and immediately?
They can either put them on the list, they can draft them and put them on the list and have them not play for 12 months, or they can rookie them themselves.
Mm-hmm. So you will delist them, though?
Yeah, we have to, yeah.
Oh, you have to.
I believe we do. Unless we want to keep them on the list. But I'm not. You'd have to talk to Purdy, or Barmy about the express details on that. But my understanding is that we would delist them and then re-rookie them. And we've gone two players short right through the year. But we've provided really strong support to both the boys. We'd hope that there was. I mean, if they wanted to continue their football careers, we'd certainly. We wouldn't expect it, but we'd hope that they would wish to continue their careers with us or have that opportunity to redeem and to restart their careers here. And I suppose we saw it with Ahmed Saad. Probably the only similar situation was St Kilda had to delist him and we're going to re-rookie him. And there were a few clubs that were prepared to try and have a shy at Ahmed before he got picked up at St Kilda, and it was really clear that he wanted to stay at St Kilda, and I think it was the goodwill of other clubs that actually had that. But there's
Do you think that will exist again?
Well, it's a fair market. It's free trade. Yeah. Ahmed was able to play straight away, so I mean it's a fair decision. If you had a club that was prepared to take that risk and to have a couple of players not play for him for 12 months, that's a pretty big call.
Are you concerned about your forward line? Have you worked out what the balance of the forward line should be? Albeit you've got the problem, obviously, with no Travis at the moment, but you've dropped Jesse White for tomorrow. So did you go a bit too tall last week? And have you worked out what the ideal makeup's going to be?
No, there's a little bit about role and a little bit about... What you're looking to find in the makeup of your forward line, tall and small balance. If we don't have players that are playing the way that we need them to and to be executing their role, well, then you have to look a little bit differently to shift and change the balance. We have Darcy, who we know will attack the aerial ball at all costs, and in his three games of football has shown a real willingness to do exactly that every time the ball's in his area. Witts and Grundy have both shown the capacity to get their hands to it. Brody last week marked the balls that he was missing against West Coast, dropped four marks in the goal square against West Coast, which would have had a significant difference for us. But in and around that, I think people underrate the aerial ability of Degoe, Fasolo and Elliott. So we're not shy on the ability to impact in the air, but we are specifically looking for a pick-up in our ability to defend our forward 50 when the opposition get the pill. So that's a consideration as well.
Bucks, Jamie Elliott comes back in. I know he was out through injury, but the Port Adelaide game, what was said to him behind closed, well, if you're allowed to, behind closed doors about how he acted.
Oh, look, you know, and that was a while ago now, and Jamie unfortunately hadn't had a chance to respond to any of the criticism that came his way. And externally, you know, when we lose, we've lost it, just lost our third game in a row at that point. It was a Thursday night game, so it was, you know, there for everyone to see. Yeah. And Jamie's a young player who has a fantastic team attitude. He turns himself inside out for his teammates. He had a couple of bad moments on that evening. And if it was a pattern of behaviour, we'd be really concerned. But it's isolated, yeah. And we don't expect that to continue. And I reckon if you pause a young person's development in footy and the fact that it's laid out bare for all to see, no one's perfect. But he's a great young man. He's got a great attitude, and he'll understand himself and what the team is asking from him better because of those actions.
It's been a fair bit of discussion over the last probably 3 or even 4 years now about the imports from other clubs that you've had. There's quite a collection, yeah, over that journey. I mean, Varco's been fantastic this, yep, year. You've been unlucky with Greenwood.
Yep.
Jesse White gets dropped. Looking at all of them over the period of 3 or 4 years, how do you reckon you've fared, and given that result, would you approach it differently now?
Fairly general. Look, I think one thing that we were really conscious of over the last couple of years in particular was making sure that we could add ready-made players. So the free agency loophole was there and available. Add a mature age player that you think can come in and play a role whilst trading another player that could bring in a first-round draft pick to freshen up your list and to bring some young talent. You know, we were fairly consolidated with that. We probably had 5 or 6 options on the table and took a couple each of those years. And we think that we've had reasonable success with them. Quinton Lynch was one early. Chris Dawes to Melbourne and got a first-round draft pick in, and then went and had a chat to Quinton Lynch about getting him over. Now, Lynchy didn't play as much footy as we would have liked, but the hidden benefit of a bloke like him is a premiership player that comes in, and the way that he operates around the gym, the way that he attacks his football, the attitude that he has to team, and that's probably the hidden benefit of getting a quality character in. And we've always looked really strongly at character and making sure that we're bringing the right people into the footy club to help our young players that we're clearly bringing in with those picks. We think that Jack Crispin, Travis Varco and Levi Greenwood will be really good for us. Jesse's played a lot of footy, so we think he's been really strong. Clinton Young has missed basically the first year with injury right through the year. Second year was a lot better, and this year he struggled again, so we would have liked to have had him up and running a little bit more. Who else have we got?
Jordan Russell.
Yeah, Jordan Russell was, you know, it was a little bit about use out of the back half. And I think Nufa played about a dozen games for us. But in the end, you've got a list of 45. If you're bringing players in from another organisation, once again, I think you're going for character, but you're definitely going for players that you think are going to make you better in a top 22 sense. And we feel that we've added role players that we're able to facilitate and bring some experience and structure around the ground that's helped us build off. They haven't been all wins, but we haven't been disappointed with what we've got.
Can you tell us, Scotty Pendlebury as a captain, is he at the peak of his powers? Well, he certainly is as a player. Yeah. As a captain, has he still got places to go?
Yeah, there's been real growth in the last 12 months in particular. And I think, we were talking about Jamie Elliott and being highlighted for a couple of isolated actions. And when you go through hard times, I think it builds a resilience within you that can make you give you a better understanding of what's important. Not to take the good times for granted. And Pendles has had a, you know, steel side bottom and a couple of others at the footy club. They had a fairly blessed run from the moment they walked in and played finals every year. And last year was the first year that Pendles missed finals. And talking to him after that, there's just a stronger, steely resolve in him as a leader to drive his teammates. And he's just getting better and better. You couldn't ask much more from him from a football sense. He's so team orientated, you know, influences games profoundly, week in, week out, very consistent. But his development and leadership in a leadership capacity has been first class.
Where's he at contract-wise? Is he still got another year to go? Or?
I'm not altogether sure at the contract. I think it's at the end of next year. But I know that Pendles is Collingwood and Collingwood is Pendles.
There wouldn't be a player in the competition less likely to leave their club than Scott Pendlebury, would there?
No, I wouldn't think so.
Nah. Kind of tough to get Hodgie out of
extending it or anything soon.
He's a massive part of what our future is going to be. You know, we've got plans and designs around what our team's going to look like in 2017-18 when we think that we are going to, when this particular evolution of our list is going to reach its full maturity potentially. Pendles, steel side bottom, Travis Cloak.
Chalor.
Yeah, good on you. Yeah, and they're all a part of what we're trying to build. So, he's a big part of that, and is very clear on where that sits.
Now, it's been very serious for most of the time tonight, but we want to, before we let you go, Bucks, we have a thing after the coach's box on a Friday night, which Moon's host, Kingy, started it a few years ago, called the Shizen File. So, where we just capture all the bits and pieces that probably didn't come out of the mouth so well from ourselves and other people in football. We just want to quickly, there's a point to this, by the way. 2014, we'll start with the winner of last year's gold, Shizen.
Can I ask you, when you're off season, when you go home, what we hear about when you guys go home is that it's a place you want to be and it's, you never really want to get too far away from true home. How difficult is it to stay away from home, but here being, away, for protracted periods of time, 10 months or so? Is there always a pull back to up north?
Well, I'm lucky, I'm from Lara. So 10 minutes down the road.
Well, I know that.
That was Derms Alan Christensen, beauty. 2013, who was it then?
When you three signed, it's been a fantastic journey. You got drafted, you sort of went over, you didn't go back, and then you come out of contract and everyone thought, let's go and get Patrick Dangerfield and bring him back to Victoria.
So that was Robbo in 2013.
So am I going to feature here at some stage?
Yeah, shortly.
Because I just want to let you know it's 7:05 I was supposed to leave at 7.
I'd be more than happy not to play this
quick
next one.
Fence him in, mate.
Next one to you from 2012.
Well, we appreciate your thoughts and thank you for joining us. It's going to be fascinating to watch, first of all, whether he goes at the end of the year and, of course, how far, when he comes back and whether that'll have any say on anything and how he goes, how they go, and if he goes and what the Crows do in response to that. If they, as you suggested last week, Robbo, go looking perhaps for a Travis Cloak. Thanks for joining us, Mark.
No worries. Thanks, boys.
Mark Masciuto there from Fox Footy.
And now this year we have this.
I think the decision, the process, like from a pure football situation, on the decision that he made, the situation, the position on the field, the opposition player, where he was situated, where the ball was, where the angle he was coming from, I can understand entirely from a football perspective how that was, would have had very little malice and was all about trying to come back and win the ball and defend.
So you recovered better than Robbo and I did, I'll give you that.
It was a strong recovery. Do you have any idea what you were talking about?
I still can't work it out.
I think it was a Stephen May hit, wasn't it?
If that is the best you have this year compared to those other three winners, this particular batch is a long way behind.
No, actually, Moons has got one that's almost as good.
No, I'm in this thing every week, mate.
You know what?
The gym knows.
I mean, you're on air quite a bit.
Yeah.
But you know what you're talking about. No, you don't have to respond to questions.
No.
Press conferences. 2 or 3 a week.
Thanks.
And I'm going to fire things at you flat out so you can win it again.
Thanks for coming in, Bucks. Good luck tomorrow.
Good on you, Bucks. Appreciate it.
Nathan Buckley's been our guest in the coach's box for the all-new Nissan NP300 Navara here. Now test drive at your Nissan dealer today. And Odyssey Financial. Achieve the future you deserve next. Friday Night Footy, Hawthorn and Richmond from the Jet.